The Federal Trade Commission is finalizing a multi-pronged lawsuit against Amazon. The suit is expected to target the $1.3 trillion company's logistics and advertising arms, among other things. The lawsuit is expected to be filed as early as next month. If successful, it could mean breaking up parts of Amazon. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use Amazon a lot? Do you try to avoid it? Do you find it hard to buy stuff that you need without going to Amazon? Do you think it should be considered a monopoly? Would you like to see it broken up? And if you sell stuff on Amazon, love to hear from you. What do you see as the pros and cons? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Peter Carstensen is an emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School. He's an expert in antitrust law and competition policy and a senior fellow of the American Antitrust Institute. Peter, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
A lot of our listeners are familiar with Amazon as a place to buy stuff. Putting on the antitrust lens, though, what does Amazon look like from that perspective?
Well, it looks like a very large company that seems to be very dominant in certain areas, the logistics, the online kind of buying and selling, and some of the other services that it provides seem to be ones in which it has very substantial market power.
What when it comes to antitrust regulation, you know, having a lot of power is one thing. Having enough for an agency like the Federal Trade Commission to convince courts that it's a problem is another. What kind of standard do we have to rise to have a successful antitrust litigation against a big company like Amazon?
That's the $100 million, or I should say $100 billion question always, because courts can be very different in their perspectives about what's involved, what needs to be shown. Basically, the concept of a violation of Section 2, that's the anti-monopoly provision of antitrust law, is that you have to show that a firm either has or is attempting to acquire a, quote, monopoly position. Well, monopoly in law does not mean having 100% of the market. Mm-hmm. It means having dominance, very substantial dominance of the market. And when I say very substantial, notice that that's inherently a variable concept. Cases have tended to say a firm with 50% or less of a market is probably not a monopolist. Although if it is seeking to acquire a monopoly by driving others from the market, it could be an attempted monopolist. When you get over 70 or 80% of a market, that's generally thought by courts to constitute a monopoly market position. One of the problems with that is that it assumes that we can figure out who's competing with whom. And so there are other ways of thinking about it, especially does a firm have significant power over the prices that it charges? That is, it can charge a number of different prices for its goods, make a profit, and so it has a lot of discretion that way. And does it have the ability to drive competitors from the market by its pricing and other practices, even if we're not quite sure whether what it monopolizes? It has, if it meets those two criteria, a monopoly position in the market, and so we're again concerned about its conduct and maybe even its market structure.
Talking to Peter Carstensen. He's an antitrust expert, emeritus professor at the UW-Madison Law School, talking about Amazon, likely lawsuits coming from the Federal Trade Commission for antitrust action against the giant internet company and other stuff company. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your opinions on this, your experiences. Now, Peter, from a consumer experience, I might say, okay, yeah, I could buy stuff on Amazon. I could buy stuff on a store's website. I could go to a big box store or my local grocery store for a lot of things. To me, as a consumer, maybe that doesn't feel like a monopoly. Is that relevant to what you expect to see from the FTC, though?
First of all, yes, that is exactly the issue that one needs to think about. If consumers are not seeing that their options are foreclosed, that sounds as if you're saying maybe from a consumer perspective, it's not a problem. But there are other perspectives. Suppliers of goods and services, one of the repeating concerns with Amazon is that it has induced a number of small and middle-sized businesses to use its services, and that it then puts them in a situation where their ability to compete is significantly reduced and controlled, so that Amazon, in effect, forecloses competition in the supply market rather than in the consumer market, because the other entities you've suggested are all very large enterprises. So that the mom and pop business, the small business that is trying to build itself, needs to use platforms like Amazon, and indeed, are there other platforms that they can use? That would be an important question to ask.
And that seems like it's going to be key to this lawsuit. If I have a widget company, Rob's Widgets, and I'm selling on Amazon, Amazon rules say I have to sell my widgets at the cheapest price possible on Amazon. I can't charge more there than in other platforms. And if I want them to show up on the widget search ahead of other companies, I got to pay to that. I have to advertise on Amazon. Is that the kind of market power that that could get Amazon into trouble?
Yes, that's exactly the kind of scenario where you look at that and say, well, wait a minute now. If you're offering to run a marketplace and then charging people for their positions in the market and restricting their freedom to compete, and they comply with both of those requirements, those are significant restrictions on their ability to compete. How can you do that? You can only in the business world, that only makes sense if your position, in this case, Amazon's position, is such that many users have no choice but to use Amazon. So that would be the kind of thing that the FTC might well focus on.
Another complaint I've heard in the past, and I haven't seen it talked about in terms of this impending lawsuit, is the idea, okay, my widgets, Rob's widgets, they're selling great on Amazon. Amazon has all my customer data. They could say, hey, these things are looking good. We'll make our own off-brand widgets. We'll sell them for a little bit less than Rob's, and we'll bump them up on the search. If it can be shown, and it seems like it'd be hard to show that, if it can be shown that Amazon practices in this way, undercuts, in effect, its own supplier customers, is that a risk of antitrust action?
Oh, absolutely. And indeed, you're right. That has been an issue that Amazon gets because of its logistical system, an enormous amount of data about what products are being sold, and it can then calculate what the margins are, what makes the most sense in terms of its business model to try to take over. And again, if I am in a situation we talked about a minute ago, in which I have to use Amazon, that is, it's by a substantial margin the first best alternative, now I'm subject to yet another competitive risk and potential competitive harm that I will now be squeezed out of the business. And my recollection is that there is an example of that in history involving an online diaper supply company. But I confess that I didn't go back this morning to go and look for that article and try to resurrect more specific information.
And then another angle in this I've mentioned is logistics, meaning in this case, I think how things get delivered. And so staying with my widget company, I want to ship by UPS, FedEx, US Postal Service or something. And one of the accusations against Amazon is they're saying you're going to pay a penalty if the stuff doesn't show up on our in our Amazon vans. Is that, again, actionable?
If the facts show that Amazon is again using, notice that we all come back to the leverage that somehow I have to be on the Amazon platform. And then it's using that power to exploit me, or you in this case, I should say, exploit you by forcing you to use their logistics when FedEx, UPS, the post office, given you're only selling widgets, which I thought were limited to law school classrooms anyway.
And business school.
Okay. But you think that you would be better off using another delivery system in some locations or for some of your products. And here Amazon has interfered with that freedom. That, you see, is partly, on one hand, it helps to prove the existence of their monopoly power. On the other hand, it's an adverse effect on competition in that other delivery services, other logistical services are precluded from competing for your business where they would offer a better product, better service, lower cost. So that kind of, we're linking together both the harms and the proof of the problem, proof of the power as well.
Talking to UW-Madison Law School Emeritus Professor Peter Carstensen about a likely federal antitrust suit against Amazon. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Amazon has unfair advantages, especially in the online marketplace? Do you want to see Amazon and maybe even other big technology companies more regulated, maybe split up? Or from your perspective as someone who buys on Amazon, maybe even sells on Amazon, do things work pretty well for you? You want to see them stay the way they are? Call in with your thoughts, experiences, and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison Law School Emeritus Professor Peter Carstensen about a likely Federal Trade Commission antitrust suit against Amazon. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about Amazon and antitrust law? Do you want to see the government in general be more aggressive at breaking up big companies that have monopoly power or close to it? Join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Peter, one more angle in this story, broken, by the way, by Politico. They report that Amazon Prime could be another target. It bundles books, music, and video streaming. The FTC worried, apparently, that bundle of services, I'm quoting from Politico here, is used to, quote, illegally cement the company's market power. This is the one I got to say I understand the least. Does that make sense to you?
Right. You and me both. I think the idea, and it goes back to our example of your widget business, that is, we're looking at something where they're combining a bunch of valuable services so that customers really are tied in an economic, psychological sense, to using this to the exclusion of alternatives. And then Prime, as I recall, has you pay for it. So now, again, we're trying to create barriers, or they are trying to create barriers to competition, both in kind of the core distribution of goods and services element, but also then trying to preempt more of the market for the other services that they're offering, whether it's music or a video or whatever. And so, again, this is a situation where, from one perspective at least, you're looking at it and saying you're using means that foreclose, again, competition on the merits for each of these different services. And there's no particular reason, in terms of technological logic, that you have to combine all of these things. If you leave them separate, then there are there are three or four different domains in which there can be competition, and you can have more different alternatives.
Looking at the big picture of the rise and fall of antitrust actions by the federal government, where are we right now? It seems like we've had heydays a century ago with the trust busters, the big breakup of AT&T half a century ago. Lately, though, it seems like a tall order. We're hearing about this Microsoft acquiring Activision. The FTC tried to stop it. Doesn't look like they're going to be successful. Is this a tough time to break up big businesses?
It is less of a tough time than it was 10, 20 years ago. That is, we had a real falling off of antitrust enforcement, starting with the Reagan administration, mild recovery through thereafter, but not really bringing it back to what I am someone who is very strongly pro-antitrust enforcement, just to make sure my own point of view is clear on this, but not being brought back to that level. The Biden administration has taken a much more activist view on paper. And we've seen many more cases being filed. And what's really important and is much less visible, a number of transactions have been abandoned, either at the point when there's a serious investigation or where the Justice Department or the Trade Commission says, we're going to sue you. And the response is, oh, no, you're not, because we're not going to do that. So we've seen more success. And one of the ways you can tell is that the actual size of most mergers has declined significantly. That is, mergers are going forward, but the targets are a lot smaller, which means that the emphasis is that major mergers are going to be blocked. We're seeing somewhat more active involvement in the monopoly area. That's what we're talking about here with Amazon. The Trade Commission just today settled a major monopoly case involving a prescription drug distribution where they say they're going to get a good remedy. So I'd say we're seeing a more active effort to enforce. It's not going to always be successful. There have been some major losses. And the courts are a real stumbling block here from, again, my perspective, because they are not paying as much attention to what the law actually says as I think they ought to.
Talking to Peter Karstensen, UW-Madison Law School Emeritus Professor, looking at antitrust activity, an expected lawsuit from the Federal Trade Commission against Amazon. We got an email from Matt in Madison who writes, Amazon is the only thing that actually works. I save money and time. How about we break up U.S. oil cartels, pharmaceutical and insurance monopolies? There's a lot better things to break up than Amazon. So Matt taking that, you know, what does it mean for the consumer angle here? Peter, what do you think of what he has to say?
Well, my first reaction is I'm not at all sure that consumers are going to see anything worse from as a result of this lawsuit. First, the lawsuit's going to take years, assuming it's filed, to be resolved. Secondly, the question is, what's the resolution that occurs? And my experience, and I had 5 years in actual antitrust enforcement back many years ago, to be sure. But my bad experience and my subsequent observation is government enforcers are very, very concerned to make sure that they really don't create problems. I know that in the AT&T case, not one that I was involved in, but I know from people who were there that some of the biggest concerns came from the antitrust division. Gee, if we break up AT&T, are we going to make the world worse? Well, of course, we made the world so much better. Things that AT&T had suppressed for years came out, like cell phones. So I think one should not be concerned very much. Some concerns legitimate, but that I think it's unlikely that whatever remedy might be reached, assuming a violation is found, that it will have any significant adverse effect on consumers.
One argument I've seen over the last decade, I think, or so, Peter, is there's something different about technology and internet-based things where you need a critical mass of customers or social media users or what have you. So monopoly laws, antitrust laws don't really apply to these things. They don't work unless they get to a certain size. What do you think?
I think that's a real problem to be looked at, because indeed there are these effects, the network effect, the need for scale. Partly it's thinking about where do we need scale? Where can we have independent operations? A project I'm working on, I've been working on for a long time with a colleague, has been looking at what some of the alternatives are for dealing with these technological bottlenecks. How can we create ownership of the bottlenecks that will make them as open as possible and will allow competition to flourish in the parts that don't require substantial market power? And the phone system is one example. The internet itself is a wonderful example of how we've got a system that is a single system, but it's accessible to many people, many platforms. So it requires understanding the technology and figuring out how it can be made as competitive, as consistent with competition as possible.
In just our last half a minute or so, Peter, you mentioned this could take a long time. Assuming this antitrust action is filed next month, how long, what steps are there along the way till it gets resolved?
Oh, it would be filed, and it's not clear whether they would file it in court or as an administrative agency matter. Either way, litigation of this sort takes many years. I'd say 3 years, depending on the judge or the administrative law judge, 3 years, 4 years to trial, to judgment. And then if it takes an appeal, as there is likely to be, that's another 2 or 3 years. If you have to go all the way to the Supreme Court, it's going to be at least another 3 years. So you're looking at maybe a 7-year process, and that's a very rough guess. Now, at various stages, they can settle this case, and that's what I would actually expect is very likely to happen is some kind of settlement.
Peter, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Sure. My pleasure.
That's Peter Carstensen, emeritus professor at the UW-Madison Law School. He's an expert at antitrust law. He talked to us about likely Federal Trade Commission antitrust lawsuits against Amazon.